story of mining in Minnesota is an old, old story. Dennis Martin manages the mineral potential section of the Minnesota DNR. When he looks at a map of the Mesabi Iron Range, Martin sees a 2-billion-year-old shoreline.
The Earth's ocean at that time was saturated with dissolved iron. So there were very unusual conditions that existed 2 billion years ago. And really, those unusual set of geologic conditions have not existed on planet Earth since that time.
As Martin relates, deposits of copper and nickel in the Northeast originated 1 billion years later when the continent split open from northern Minnesota to Kansas, bringing molten magma to the surface. Add to these the ancient granite formed deep beneath the surface, the layers of quartz-based silica sand used for fracking, laid down by shallow seas some 500,000 years ago, and the peatlands, made of organic matter built up through the centuries in the bed of glacial Lake Agassiz. But how the materials got here is only the beginning of the story. There is also the fundamental question of ownership. Who owns the rights to mine a property? We tend to think of a property as a parcel of land with precise borders, the owner controlling all. But real estate professionals liken ownership of property to holding a bundle of sticks. Cindy Boyce is division manager for property records in Washington County.
Everybody has a certain number of sticks for the property that they own, but they also give out one of those sticks to their lender. One of those sticks goes to the county in which they live in for taxes. It could also go for an easement for a neighbor. It could go for any number of things so that you don't have a complete, full bundle of rights or interest in your property.
One of these sticks is the ownership of mineral rights, which can be severed and taxed as a separate estate. Your property deed won't necessarily indicate whether the mineral rights were ever severed from your land. You'd need to do a title search to be certain. The largest single owner of mineral rights in Minnesota is the state, with roughly 12 million acres of mineral interests, many obtained from tax-forfeited properties. It's a one-way street. If the state owns the mineral rights below your land, you can't buy them back. Of course, not all proposed mining projects involve state-owned mineral interests. Scott Strand is executive director of the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
You can look at a single pit, and different parts of that pit will have different mineral ownerships as you move along. There might be part that's held by the school trust, which is where the revenues are supposed to go to the school trust fund and benefit K-12 education. It can be held by the university trust, which is supposed to benefit the University of Minnesota. It can be held by the state, DNR. It can be held by other private interests. All of those are possible. So the ownership can be really complicated, but the assumption that this is all state-owned mineral interests that state taxpayers are going to somehow benefit from, that's not accurate.
Official state policy, as enacted by statute, is to provide for the diversification of the state's mineral economy. And many have raised concerns about the DNR's dual role of both regulating and promoting mining. Kathy Lewis is the assistant director of the Land and Minerals Division of the DNR.
Well, the DNR is the technical experts and the staff that does the work. There's a check and balance automatically been built in the system for over a century now that there's an oversight to the state mineral leasing process.
Minnesotans are asked to trust the environmental review and permitting processes to result in wise decisions regarding mining. Citizens who try to get meaningfully engaged in the process can feel disenfranchised by the timing of the review. It can seem as though the horse has already left the gate. Again, Scott Strand.
If you've already made the decision you want to do the project, there's always going to be a question as to how deep your analysis of the environmental impacts is going to be. Too often, the decision to proceed is where you start, and then doing the environmental impact statement is about checking a box and making sure you're not challenged in court. Which is not giving full credit or credence to that process.
There is much to gain and much to lose in the exercise of mining rights in Minnesota, with the resulting decisions only as good as the political and cultural systems in place to support them. Rod Squires is associate professor in the Department of Geography, Environment, and Society at the University of Minnesota.
One of the problems we have with human beings is that we kind of keep stumbling from one problem, or one question, or one goal to another. And it would be nice to kind of step back and ask the question, you know, what do we expect from our society? What do we expect from the area we live in?
We might take a lesson from Minnesota's indigenous people with their long history in this place. Winona LeDuc shares the Anishinaabe concept of property ownership. "It is not our land," she writes. "It is the land to which we belong." For KFAI, this is Lori Allman. 10,000 Fresh Voices on KFAI is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.